history nerds and historians. My name is Christina, and this is Effed Up History. This is where we talk about a little tip of history that's super fucked up. We are back with the Tudors, my friends. So it has been a wild ride for this last month. Like I mentioned in the last episode, I had a death in the family, and then I just, like, could not bring myself to continue talking about the Tudors for some reason. They're very interesting to me. I don't know if it was specifically this episode that I didn't want to talk about or what, but I couldn't do it. But now I am ready to dive back into them and talk all about them. So if you've forgotten or need a little bit of a refresher, because it has been a long time since we started, did I mention that, like, the Tudors were only supposed to be the month of May? And that did not go to plan at all. It's going to be all of May, June, and July at this rate because of taking time off and just stories being a lot more interesting than I thought they would be. So again, if you need a little bit of a refresher, I'm going to give a brief synopsis of the last, like, what, 6 episodes of The Tudors. And everything that happened very briefly in, like, 2 minutes or less. So if you don't want to hear that, you can go ahead and skip ahead. If not, here you go. So King Henry VII was the first Tudor king, and his son Arthur was raised to be king as his successor. So when Arthur was a teenager, he married a woman named Catherine of Aragon from Spain, but only a few months later he died. This left Catherine a widow, and Henry VII's younger son, also named Henry, as next in line for the throne. So when Henry VII died a few years later, Henry VIII became king and married his brother's widow, Catherine. They were together for over 20 years, and during that time she got pregnant many times, but only one child survived past infancy. This was a daughter that they named Mary. This wasn't great for Henry because he felt that he needed a son to ensure the continuation of his lineage. And then he met Anne Boleyn and divorced his wife Catherine, and in doing so broke with the Catholic Church, ostracized his daughter, delegitimized his daughter, and laid the foundation for the Church of England. He was married to Anne Boleyn for a couple years. She also got pregnant multiple times, but only one child survived, another daughter. This time it was named Elizabeth. And then Anne, apparently, committed treason and became the first reigning queen of England to be executed. Literally the next day, he got engaged, and then soon after married Jane Seymour, who finally gave him the son that he wanted that they named Edward, and then immediately died afterwards, less than 2 weeks later, from childbed fever. So he didn't marry again right away until his advisors basically told him that he needed to, and his right-hand man Thomas Cromwell was like, "We need a Protestant ally. Let's marry you to Anne of Cleves from Germany." Henry was super excited. He was all romantic, and she did not fall for it, and he decided that actually she wasn't something to be excited about at all. Actually, she was incredibly ugly, and he needed a hot wife. The whole Protestant ally thing did not matter, and he didn't want anything to do with her. He tried to call off her marriage unsuccessfully, never consummated it, and divorced her to marry her 17-year, possibly, if not younger, lady-in-waiting Catherine Howard when he was almost 50. But she committed treason as well by intending to commit adultery and by not being a virgin when she married him. Which sounds personal, not like a betrayal against the country, but she was executed and became the second reigning queen in English history to be executed. His last wife was a woman named Catherine Parr, who was super religious, very Protestant, and outlived him. So that's where we left off today. We are going to talk about Edward, the beloved son of Henry that he, like, literally killed for, and his successor, Lady Jane Grey, also known as the 9 Days Queen. So sit back, relax, and practice your oh good god, what the fuck faces. Edward Tudor, who later became Edward VI of England and Ireland, because remember that Henry VIII just, like, declared himself King of Ireland, as we talked about last week very briefly. I have to say last week is, like, one of my favorite episodes that I've ever done. Also my longest episode that I've ever done. So if you're, like, on a plane or something, that will get you most of the way through any flight. Edward was born on October 12th, 1537, to Jane Seymour and Henry VIII. Like I already said, his mother died 12 days after he was born. He was described as having red hair, and as he got older, one of his shoulders was slightly higher than the other one, which may have been because of how difficult his delivery was. He was assigned a nurse known as Mother Jack, and she became sort of like a stand-in mother figure for him. And when he was four, he contracted quartan, I think is how you pronounce it, quartan fever, which almost killed him, but he made a full recovery. Now, there isn't much that I can find about his childhood, and because of this, a lot of historians are sort of like split down the middle. Some say he was always really sickly, but others say that he was just like his father, and he was like really robust and athletic and like really, really active. regardless of how he was on a physical level, he was a very gifted intellectual child. He could read and speak Greek, Latin, and French, and was really interested in theology, which later became like a relative extreme form of Protestant beliefs for him. Like, he took his father's beliefs and like made them even stronger. So a not so funny side note is that at the age of 7 months, Henry VIII got his son engaged to Mary, Queen of Scots, who became queen at 6 days old. This did not end up really working out for multiple reasons, but Henry wanted Mary to be raised in England, and Scotland was like, no, we are not doing that. Like, I know she's less than a year old at this point, but she's queen and we're not just gonna like send her to England, which pissed off Henry. It's absolutely like no one's fucking surprised. Like, everything pissed off Henry. And it started the most savage campaign that the English launched against the Scottish. And this was led by Edward Seymour, and it was known as the Rough Wooing, which sounds like a really bad romance novel. But it's not funny, though. we laugh, but not ha-ha funny. So, on January 28th, 1547, his father, Henry VIII, died. And this was obviously very devastating to Edward. And Edward, at only 9 years old, became an orphan. And I read that he clung to Elizabeth a lot because she was orphaned also at this point. And they tried to find comfort in each other over the death of their father. And on February 19th, 1547, Edward was coronated and became Edward VI. But because he was so young at that point, at only 9 years old, this would be run by like a council, led by his uncle and Jane Seymour's brother, Edward Seymour, who also held the title of the Duke of Somerset. Edward Seymour, Duke of Somerset, was very Protestant, like extremely so. So within that year, with him kind of like overseeing everything, the churches had to start speaking English, not Latin or any other languages that they would conduct their services in. It introduced the Book of Common Prayer, and it repealed the heresy laws that Henry VIII put into place. So like, for example, the Witchcraft Act of 1542, which I have to mention because, hello, historian of witchcraft. Hi, nice to meet you if you did not realize. I always have to bring everything back to witchcraft. Okay, guys, it's just what happens. And if you don't like it, this is not the podcast for you because that is what I do. Okay, creepy, kooky, mysterious, spooky history. Me, hello, hi, nice to meet you. Edward Seymour was also continuing this like rough wooing, trying to basically force the Scottish to just like give them Mary, Queen of Scots, which had the adverse effect. And she was sent to France, where she later married Dauphin Francis, who was the son of King Henry II of France. So from what I read, Edward Seymour kept Edward VI relatively poor and kind of like restricted him a lot. So Edward VI turned towards his other uncle, Thomas Seymour, which is Edward Seymour's brother and the man that Catherine Parr married quite quickly after Henry VIII died. And they seemed, Edward and Thomas, that is, seemed to sort of like plot against Edward Seymour a little bit. And Thomas was trying to get more power. He was trying to like rise in social status a little bit. And now that it was clear that Edward VI's chances with Mary Tudor were sort of like not happening, Thomas was sort of like, hey, how about you marry this other person instead? I have a ward. Her name is Lady Jane Grey. I think that she would be perfect for you. She's a very Protestant woman. She would make a good queen by your side. She's very soft-spoken. She's very intelligent. She could probably be relatively obedient. She's very close in age to you. I think she'd make a great match. And then you marry her, and then I will marry Princess Elizabeth now that my wife is dead. which we will talk more about that, because I've only started exploring the, like, inappropriate relationship between Thomas Seymour and Elizabeth, so I can't, like, fully, express my thoughts on that at this moment, because I'm still researching it, but it's kind of creepy, and I don't really love it, whether it was, like, a relationship or just an attempted relationship or, like, a grooming situation. It's not great, but we'll talk more about that when we talk about Elizabeth. Edward Seymour did not like this plan that was coming about between Thomas Seymour and Edward VI. And so Edward Seymour actually had his brother Thomas arrested, and he was executed for treason in 1549. That same year, 1549, Edward Seymour, Duke of Somerset, was overthrown by John Dudley, Earl of Warwick, who later became the Duke of Northumberland. And Edward Seymour met the same fate as his brother and was executed in 1552 when he sort of, like, tried to take his position back. Terrible for Edward Seymour, but great for this podcast, because now it's a lot less confusing of having two Edwards in charge. So from here on out, if I say Edward, I am talking about Edward VI of England/Ireland. So John Dudley, Duke of Northumberland, pushed in 1552-ish that now that Edward VI was 14 years old, he was old enough to run the country. Which, I mean, poor country if a 14-year-old is the one who's in charge of it and making all the decisions. But really, it seemed like Dudley was still controlling the government, still controlling all the decisions and everything, while just sort of, like, using Edward as a mask. So it seems like John Dudley may have been, like, relatively maybe not manipulative, but pulling the strings behind Edward, because he was a very trusted advisor. And so Edward was turning to him for a lot of things. And most likely, a lot of the decisions made were John Dudley's ideas, at least at first, even if he sort of, like, played them to be like, oh, hey, yes, this is a great idea. Good job, my child king. Now, again, with this whole thought process, I'm not sure if this next thing was Edward's idea or if he was, like, influenced, but he began to rethink the line of succession, and he created something that he called the device of succession. So if you remember, Henry VIII made a plan for succession before he died. So first the crown would go to Edward VI, check. And then when Edward VI passed, it would go to Princess Mary. And then after that, it would go to Princess Elizabeth. But the problem with this is that Edward VI, like I said already, followed his father's example of being a Protestant and actually took it farther and became kind of an extreme Protestant, which is, like, all fine and good. Like, good for him. I shit talk religion. Like, I have no problem with religion. But the problem with this succession is that the next in line, being Mary, meant that the next in line was a Catholic woman. And we simply could not have that. Not only just a woman, but a Catholic woman. So this was something that he had a problem with for a long time, her being a Catholic. When he was 10, he actually, like, wrote a letter to Mary that was like, I heard that she goes to dances and she needs to stop that immediately. He's like, what? A dance in my good Christian neighborhood? I don't think so, Missy. Not on my watch. And then he summoned her to London to be like, hey, you need to stop with the whole Catholic thing because I don't like it. And she was like, I would literally rather die. Like, you can kill me right here. I will gladly sacrifice my life for my religion. And he was like, I don't need that. I don't want that. Thank you. Thank you. But no, thank you. And then she lectured him. Like, I would pay money to see Mary, the badass bitch that she is, lecture the king. Like, I think of, like, a taller and female Tyrion Lannister lecturing baby Joffrey. And I want to see it so badly. And she basically told him that, like, he was too young to know how life works and that he was still, you know, a relatively baby. And as he got older, he would understand things better. And he was basically like, yeah, well, even though you're super old and disgusting because you're so old, like, you can still learn too. Burn. So he just didn't want her to be next in line, partially because of the Catholic thing, but also he may have been holding a grudge as well. So in his very, very Protestant opinion, she would, like, literally ruin the country. So then logic would say that he would figure out a way to delegitimize Mary again and then have the crown go to his other half-sister, Elizabeth, who was Protestant and he had a relatively good relationship with. And, I mean, at least they found comfort in each other. And she seemed like she'd be perfect. She was young. She was a descendant of King Henry VIII. She was Protestant. There was nothing wrong with her. So she would be perfect to be next in line. I mean, that's what you would think, right? But that is where he will be wrong, because he didn't want Elizabeth to inherit the throne either, which makes literally, like, no sense. Like, we historians cannot figure out why. I looked it up a lot, and it seems like a lot of historians think that it would have just caused more issues, and that if he were to exclude one sister, he had to exclude the other as well. And if he was trying to delegitimize Mary, that meant that he also had to delegitimize Elizabeth as well, because they were both from previous wives, both of those marriages ended, and they were delegitimized at one point. So Edward looked elsewhere, but he was surrounded by a bunch of women. What a fucking nightmare. And he couldn't have that. So first in line in this divisive succession was Lady Frances's male heir. So Lady Frances was the daughter of King Henry VIII's sister, Mary. So, like, his Edward's first cousin. But the problem was that she had no living male heir. She had three daughters, so she was able to have children, but she hadn't had a child in over 7 years, and they were all women. So if she didn't have any male heirs, then where would we have to look next? Well, we would look at her daughter, Lady Jane Grey. So Lady Jane Grey was 15 at the time, but the crown wouldn't go to her either. It would go to her male heirs, so her sons. But like I said, she was only 15 and she wasn't married, so she didn't have any sons. And again, the crown would go to some hypothetical child that didn't actually exist yet. So then if Jane didn't have any male heirs, it would go to Lady Catherine Grey and all of her male heirs, not aunt. So if she didn't have any male heirs, it would go to Lady Catherine Grey's male heirs, who was Jane's sister. And also 12. So obviously she wasn't married and didn't have any children. And after that, it went to Jane's other sister's male heirs, the sister that was named Mary, who was 7. And it just goes, like, on and on to all of these hypothetical men that don't exist. So you see this pattern that is arising. They're trying so desperately to make sure that it was going to go to a male heir. And it isn't at all, like, it isn't all because of misogyny, which I'm sure is probably, like, really bananas to hear me say, because it's, like, my favorite thing to point out. But there had never really been, like, an uncontested female successful queen of England, right? So there was Empress Matilda in the 1100s, who I talked about briefly, but she was never fully coronated, and she was usurped within a couple months, and it, like, descended into war over it. So by putting a woman on the throne when it had never happened before successfully may just completely destroy England, which was already in sort of, like, a precarious position at the time because of the Protestant Reformation. And if this next in line queen was a Catholic, to top it off, England would be destroyed. At least that was the opinion of Edward and his advisors. I mean, that is what ends up happening, and England is still here. So obviously this was paranoia, but there were a lot of issues that came along with Mary becoming queen eventually. So this divisive succession also doesn't really, like, take into consideration, like, what if Catherine Grey, the one that was 12, were to get married in a couple years. So say when she's like 15 or 16, she gets married and she has a son right away, because that is like the goal as a woman in Tudor England, right? And then after she has a son, Lady Jane Grey gets married as well. And then he dies. Edward dies, right? So you have Lady Catherine, who is the third in line at this point, and she has a son. And then Lady Jane Grey gets married and Edward dies. And then Catherine's son is pronounced as king, and then Lady Jane Grey has a son right afterwards. Or Lady Frances, the next in line for the throne. Or she has a son afterwards. So this is very confusing, right? And I apologize for this being so confusing. But basically, it could jumble everything up because these women were so young and they didn't have any children yet. And all of the divisive succession, we go to these hypothetical children. So like if Catherine were to have a son and then Jane were to have a son and then Lady Frances were to have a son and it go in that order, it could also cause calamity. And it becomes very confusing and could just cause like a lot of fighting in between the Grey family, because technically if Lady Frances were to have a son, technically he's supposed to be king, but this other kid was pronounced it beforehand. So it could be all of these issues if you're going by this legal device of succession, right? So this plan was revised to say that if Lady Frances had a son, that he would inherit the throne only if Edward were still alive. But the rest of it still stood for the most part. So it didn't really take into consideration if Catherine had a son before Lady Jane Grey, but like in a perfect world, that wouldn't happen, right? So now all these men in court are trying to marry off their sons to the Grey daughters, which sounds like a bitching band name. But conveniently, the Duke of Northumberland has now orchestrated that his son, Guilford Dudley, is going to marry Lady Jane Grey, so that Guilford will be father of the potential king, and then the Duke will be grandfather to the potential king. So the Duke of Northumberland is going to keep his high standing in court by being the grandfather of a potential king in the future. It's all very confusing, and I apologize if you're having to like literally draw a diagram right now. So once Lady Jane Grey was married to Guilford Dudley, Jane's sisters, Catherine, was married to the son of the Earl of Pembroke named Henry Herbert. And then Jane's younger sister, Mary, who remember was 7 when this was written, was engaged to Lord Grey of Wilton, who was 36 years older than her. And she was too young to get married, thankfully, at 7, so she didn't marry him at that time and at all, really. She actually got married, like, in secret when she got older to a man named Thomas Keyes. Although that's not a happy story because she did it behind the Queen's back. Maybe when we talk about Queen Elizabeth, we'll talk about that. I don't know. I haven't written that script yet. I don't know if it'll be, like, an important part of Queen Elizabeth's story or if it'll just be, like, one of the mass numbers of people who went against Queen Elizabeth and were executed for it, you know? So in April of 1552, poor Edward VI gets sick with measles and smallpox at the same time. That poor baby, because like he's still a child at this time. He's like 15 years old. This poor kid, like that is absolutely terrible to do this. And this is like right after Edward Seymour dies and like right after it's determined that he can rule, he gets super sick with measles and smallpox. And then a few months after that, Edward starts showing the first signs of consumption or tuberculosis, as we call it today. And it was very aggressive. It was most likely like exasperated by the smallpox or measles. I can't remember which one. There is like historically a correlation between one of those and tuberculosis later on. I'm not sure which one it is. But sometimes you'll see like a heightened risk of tuberculosis after you've had one of those. And he was told that he wasn't going to recover from this tuberculosis. He was told that this was going to kill him. He was told that this was so extreme that there was no coming back from it, really. And he was only 15. Like, he is still a baby and being told that he's going to die. And then having to now, as king, have like the weight of the country on his shoulders while also having the morality and the mortality issue of being like, I'm never going to get married. I'm never going to have children. I'm never going to I'm just never going to live. Like, I'm 15 years old and now I have to die. And like, no child should have to deal with that. And no child should have to go through that. And also have the weight of a literal country on his back. And at this point, he realizes that this device of succession that he's made isn't going to work because none of them have children yet, even though, like, Lady Jane Grey is married, she doesn't have a son yet. So there's no way that there's going to be a son that will inherit the throne. So he changes it. Like, one of the last things that he does is he changes it that the crown will go to the male heirs of Lady Jane Grey, or if there were none, that Lady Jane Grey herself would inherit it. And it seemed like as much as he was trying to prevent it, England would be ruled by a woman, but at least that woman would be a Protestant, right? So although there are questions whether this was even legal or, like, written by Edward himself, it's very convenient that all of this is written. And then conveniently, Jane marries Northumberland's son, and now this family and, like, all of Northumberland's descendants are going to be monarchs. But, I mean, that's what happens. And then on July 6, 1553, Edward VI dies from tuberculosis. And it was awful. It was a terrible death for him. Like, it was horrific to read how he died. So the medicines that they were giving him most likely contained arsenic, which added poison to the whole suffering. Like, they thought that arsenic was a helpful sort of, like, antidote, and actually it was not. So whether it was because of being poisoned or because of the tuberculosis, his limbs started to go gangrenous. He lost his hair and nails. Losing hair and nails is a sign of arsenic poisoning, so that most likely was not due to the tuberculosis. That was most likely due to the arsenic. And then his limbs started swelling, like, his whole body was swelling. This poor kid, like, it said that he was whispering to people tending to him that he was happy that he was going to die, which, again, he's 15. Like, a 15-year-old should not have to say that and should not have to feel that way. You know, like, you're a baby, you haven't even started living it. Like, did he even go through puberty yet? This poor kid. And then there's this whole, like, story, folklore, what have you, that says that the night that he died, there was this terrible thunderstorm and the ghost of Henry VIII could be seen, and he was stamping his feet and throwing a temper tantrum as the lightning and the thunder struck, and he was so angry that his dynasty was ending, like, this dynasty that he literally killed for, and this dynasty that he did so much to ensure would survive was just dying out, because we all know a dynasty can't be continued by a woman, of course. So after his death on July 6th, it wasn't announced to the public right away. Like, people knew he was sick, but they didn't know that he died for a few days because John Dudley, Duke of Northumberland, was trying to get everything together and ensure that Lady Jane Grey got to the throne. And Edward VI is finally buried, like, a month later. He's given a Protestant ceremony, even though his sister Mary did not want a Protestant ceremony for him. And she actually carried out, like, a Catholic mass for him at the Tower of London. But before that could happen, Lady Jane Grey was announced as queen on July 10th of 1553. So Lady Jane Grey was born sometime in 1537, most likely in the autumn. Again, birth records for people who aren't born into the monarchy are relatively rare to find, but she was born in 1537. She was the oldest daughter of Lady Frances and Henry Grey. And then, like I said already, she had two sisters, Catherine and Mary. So Jane Grey was very well educated. She spoke Greek, Latin, French, Italian, and also Hebrew. I read that they were teaching her Hebrew because she found the other languages so easy. Like, she was a child prodigy. They were teaching her Hebrew so that she could read the Bible in the original Hebrew. So she could, like, read the original Bible as they were written, and she didn't need to, like, rely on translations later on by other people who may have, like, misconstrued it or changed it or anything. She was going to the primary sources. She was, like, a true historian, and we love that. She took her education really seriously. She preferred reading over anything else. She was just this, like, cute, adorable little bookworm. Like, at one point, she was at home and her tutor had asked her, like, hey, why aren't you outside playing with everyone else? And she was reading Plato and was like, nah, I would much rather read this book. Those people who are outside have never known true pleasure. They've never known the pleasure of reading a book. And I just relate so hard to this girl. Like, disassociating in books is my favorite pastime. In 1547, when she was about 10 years old, she went to go live with Catherine Parr around the same time that she got married to Thomas Seymour. This is probably why Thomas Seymour was like, hey, you should marry Lady Jane Grey and I'll get creepy with your sister. She's his half-sister. We don't really care, right? So living with Thomas Seymour and Catherine Parr, they continued to educate her, and it all seemed to be going, like, really great, really uphill. She seemed to be relatively happy. And then Catherine Parr died in 1548 after giving birth to her daughter Mary. And Lady Jane Grey was so close to Catherine Parr that she was actually the chief mourner at her funeral. After that, she became the ward of Thomas Seymour, even though it said that her father didn't want this. He wanted her to be raised around, like, a positive female influence, and he was trying to get her to come back home to their estate. And so, like, conspiracy theory brain, okay? So before her death, Catherine had sent Elizabeth away because, most likely because she was noticing her husband's wandering eye towards a teenager. So Catherine Parr being pregnant, it was believed at this time that, like, you couldn't have sex while you were pregnant because it would harm the child. And so a lot of the infidelity that you see in husbands happened when their wives were pregnant. I mean, that's something that we see with Henry VIII a lot too, that, like, when his wives were pregnant, that's when he would typically go find a mistress, because we just can't expect a man to keep it in his pants for 9 whole months, right? So, yeah, so Catherine sent Elizabeth away, and maybe word had gotten out, or, like, rumors had spread that was why, maybe. Kind of scandalous. I will look into it more and see. Like I said, I haven't fully finished researching the Elizabeth episode yet. I'm working on it. Her father also could have been trying to take her back because he wanted to marry her off to someone else. That would have been more advantageous because they didn't maybe know that they were trying to marry her off to the king. Like, I don't really know what's going on with that. I don't really know, like, the whole idea behind it, obviously, because I am not Henry Grey. But it could have been that they were trying to increase their status and make a more advantageous match. Like, in the other Boleyn girl, and, like, thus just in popular culture in general, the Boleyn family is often depicted as, like, hungry for status and using their children as pawns and, like, manipulating them to get whatever they wanted out of the world. And that doesn't really seem to be exactly the case with the Boleyns, because they already were relatively high up in society, but it definitely seems like it could have been the case with the Grey family. But then Thomas was executed in March of 1549, like I already said, and then after that she went back to her family's estate. This is when she made the Plato comment that I mentioned, and we also see a glimpse into her life that it was not so great. She said that her parents treated her poorly, and she said that when she's in the presence of her father or mother, whether I speak, keep silence, sit, stand, or go, eat, drink, be merry or sad, the sewing, playing, dancing, or doing anything else, I must do it as if it were so perfectly as God made the world, or else I'm so sharply taunted, so cruelly threatened, yea, presently sometimes with pinches, nips, and bobs, that I think myself in hell. Which is depressing. That's terrible. That's a terrible upbringing for a child, that they have to, like, constantly walking on eggshells around their parents, or they will be abused, and they have to be absolutely perfect, or like, nobody is perfect. And I hate that, because she was just this cute little bookworm, and that makes total sense why she was just trying to, like, disassociate into books, because if she was outside playing, if she were to be playing wrong, she would get beaten for it. So if she's just sitting like a good little girl and reading a book, she wouldn't get beaten for it. Like, that makes total sense why she was using as books as an escape from her life. And then, like I said, she was married to Lord Guildford Dudley on May 25th, 1553. I don't know that much about their marriage because it didn't last long. But apparently he was very much of a mommy's boy, which annoyed her quite a bit. On July 9th, 1553, Jane was summoned to her father-in-law, John Dudley, Duke of Northumberland, and was told, like, hey, you're queen now. Congratulations. And she was like, fuck, I don't, I don't want that. Are you fucking kidding me? Like, are you fucking kidding me? What? To be more historically accurate, the reports actually say that she was very distressed from the news and felt that she was insufficient, and the people who were kneeling before her, pledging their allegiance, were very confused, and she was inconsolable and would not calm down until her parents and husband came to see her. She wrote that she was sad about Edward VI's death, but quote, "At the same time, I turned myself to God, humbly praying and beseeching him that if what he was given to me was rightfully and lawfully mine, his divine majesty would grant me such grace and spirit that I might govern it to his glory and service and to the advantage of the realm." So the next day, Jane and her family went to the Tower of London. So this was standard. This wasn't like a punishment or anything. There were areas in the Tower of London that were like prison cells, essentially, for nobility, but it was also common for monarchs to stay there while they were waiting for the coronation. But she was crowned and she was running the country, even though she didn't fully finish out her coronation. So Jane was recognized as queen, and like Matilda aside, she's not acknowledged as queen, which is weird. Like, Jane became the first queen regent in English history, but if you Google that, she's not who comes up as the first female monarch of England. Now, she was crowned, but the coronation ceremonies were not completed for her, and she wasn't anointed with the holy oils. So some people say that's why she wasn't acknowledged as queen, but there was a king that is acknowledged that didn't complete the full ceremony, Edward V, who was one of the princes in the tower that was allegedly killed by Richard III. But he didn't finish his coronation, and he's still recognized as king. I mean, a short-lived one who was deposed, but he's still recognized as a king. So why is Jane not? I don't understand, but I have some thoughts that we'll get to sort of when we finish this story. So Jane, as queen, one of the first things that she did was deny her husband from being crowned. And that was partially because her husband was trying to step in as king and she refused. She was like, unless Parliament passes an act to make him king, she wasn't going to give up her regency. And that did not go over well. This pissed off her husband. This pissed off his mother. But she was next in line. And she had the legal papers. Legal with the question mark. She had the legal papers that said that she would rule as queen. And she would not become a consort to him and allow him to essentially usurp the throne from her. So maybe this meek little bookworm was actually more ferocious than we thought, right? So she was like, nope, I'm here. You're not going to take the throne from me. And he wouldn't take the throne from her because someone else came in and took it and did it possibly before he had the chance or Parliament could even talk about it. Now, I don't know if it was a misstep by her advisors or something that was overlooked, but when Jane was declared queen, they didn't arrest or suppress any threats to her regency. And by that, I mean Princess Mary, who was initially supposed to inherit the throne, was free. And she was building up support. And literally 2 days after Jane arrived in London, they received word that Mary had built up support and was threatening war over the throne. And she was like, I have my army. We are armed to the nines. And we are willing to do whatever is necessary to get what was promised to me. I don't care about this device of succession. I am the rightful heir. And everyone who so wholeheartedly supported Jane and her ascension to the throne immediately abandoned her. Like, I think I read that even her father was like, damn, Mary, you're scary. Yeah, you're queen. You can have it. You can have it. You can have the throne. I'm not going to fight you for that. And then Jane was not allowed to leave the tower. So she arrived to the Tower of London being like, oh, here's a safe place for me to stay while I'm awaiting my coronation. And then like 2 days later, they walked in and they were like, hey, just kidding. Actually, this is not your prison cell. Like, did they even change her room? Did she just stay in the same place and just have it be like a safe space that quickly turned into a prison cell? So on July 19th of 1553, Mary was proclaimed Queen of England and she entered London on August 3rd, accompanied by her half-sister, Princess Elizabeth. So Queen Mary, who is later so affectionately known as Bloody Mary, did not start her reign with bloody intentions. She showed Jane a lot of mercy and was like, hey, like, I'm gonna level with you. You're a threat to the throne. I can't necessarily let you leave the Tower of London because we saw how well that went for you. And I'm not going to allow that to happen. But I want to make sure that you're comfortable and that everything is okay. And, like, I don't really want to execute you. Like, yes, you're technically a traitor, but you're also, like, 15 years old. Like, you didn't want this. You didn't want any part of this. You didn't ask for this. I totally understand that this was sort of, like, thrust upon you. You didn't even know that it was happening until it had already happened. I get it. You can just stay here and we'll, like, figure out what to do with you, right? But then in February 1554, there was Wyatt's Rebellion. Wyatt's Rebellion was led by a man named Thomas Wyatt, who was revolting against the Catholic rule and wanted to depose Mary and put Elizabeth on the throne. He didn't like that Mary was Catholic. He also didn't like that Mary was said to be marrying Philip of Spain, who was also Catholic. So this rebellion happened. I'll talk more about it in the next episode. It was kind of squashed. And then Elizabeth was arrested and put in the Tower of London as a prisoner, not as, like, a safe space to wait for your coronation, because she was now a threat. And Elizabeth was suspected of being a part of the plotting. But obviously, Elizabeth was not executed or anything for it, but other people were. During the rebellion, Jane Grey's father, Henry, joined Thomas Wyatt's side, and, like, now the Grey family is revolting against the Queen, and, like, Mary's hands were kind of tied and was advised and said that, like, she really had no other option than to execute Jane Grey. So Lady Jane and her husband were executed for high treason on February 12th, 1554. There is an account of her execution that says that she was given a handkerchief to tie around her eyes, and then she groped for the execution block, asking, "Where is it and what should I do?" And then someone guided her to the block. She kneeled before it, laid her head on the block, and allegedly said, "Lord, into thy hands I commend my spirit." And then she was beheaded, and she was only 16 years old. So Jane Grey was the 9 days queen, although very often not called a queen. And like I said, I don't understand why. I wonder if that's some sort of, like, propaganda or, like, erasure that we see a lot in history, that because Mary was the one who successfully took the throne, because to her and her supporters, like, she was rightfully the Queen of England. And if she was rightfully the Queen of England, then that meant that Jane had to have been a false queen and stole the throne from her. And therefore, in history, she's reduced to Lady Jane Grey rather than Queen Jane. I think that she was a queen. Like, coronation aside, there were, like I said, Edward V and other instances where a full coronation did not happen and they're still acknowledged as a monarch. So I believe that she was queen, and I believe that she's the first queen of England. However short her reign was, Queen Jane of England was the first queen. She's not Lady Jane Grey. She is Queen Jane Grey, in my historical opinion. So there you have it. Those are the stories of Edward VI and Jane Grey, both monarchs who had a relatively short reign and died at a very, very young age, which I always hate to see, but that's the reality of things sometimes. Thank you so much for listening. If you like what you heard and you want to hear more, please consider subscribing or leaving a review or joining my Patreon. And remember, friends, history may be watching you, so don't fuck it up. And her name was Queen Jane of England. Bye.